I'm very happy to kind of opening the LibreGraphics meeting. My name is Christoph, and today I would like to present a project that I've been working on and actually off for some time now. It's called Freeze and Press. I'm giving a short introduction. The name is Freeze and Press, FLOSS software-driven small press, and let's start with the name. Freeze stands for three things. It's the physical process of a liquid turning into a solid. Second meaning comes from breakdancing, which I do not have really a personal connection, but I find it a nice term. It's the halting of all movement in a clever position. And last but not least, freeze, a condition when computer software becomes unresponsive. As some may have noticed, freeze contains free. Free as in speech, free as in free software, free to use, study or modify, free to make modification to some streamlined purpose, free not like without cost, but like priceless, to reframe like a credit card sponsor. And finally, press. Press stands for printmaking. Printmaking as a technical and as a creative process. That gives freeze and press, which means stop, at least for a moment, and print. I'd like to start with some context. It's 1999. It's all about DIY. Inventing is cool. Technology may be something to be messed with. Turntables become instruments. Obstacles in different situations may be something to be used in interesting ways. Versions, remix sampling is a common practice, and uncleared samples interfere with the making and publishing of music. This means copyright becomes relevant, something to be dealt with. And then computers. When I started to use computers, graphical interfaces were already an integral part of certain concept of usability in general, but also for tools for creation. My first experience with code to create something visual came through making HTML pages, and the output of WYSIWYG editors, WYSIWYG meaning what you see is what you get. In my case, the editor was Microsoft Front Page on Windows NT, was not exactly awesome at this time. So even for somebody having no clue, opening a blank file in a text editor and write some HTML code yourself was an appropriate alternative. There were a lot of resources to learn about the basics. The rest could come easily by trial and error. Right-click and view source, and you would see how things work. Consequently, my first annoying encounter with proprietary mentality was Macromedia Flash. While it was a quite inspiring interface to work with vector graphics, it also introduced locking things up in an environment where the access to source code was formerly a standard. I had been interested in DIY culture and alternative copyrights for some time, and I had enjoyed reading about free software, but I actually never used it before. Then fast forward, 2006, my introduction to GNU/Linux was quite abrupt. Namely, sorry, I have to configure a bit. Namely, by renting a web server in a data center. I got talked into this by a colleague, and I was not in general against the idea of self-empowerment, and so we just did it. I barely touched free software before, but my colleague insisted that he'd know what he's doing. I have serious doubts about that right now. Anyway, we now had a computer at some remote location running Debian, accessible only over a terminal, and making fundamental mistakes meant to call someone in the data center and ask him to reboot your machine. In retrospect, this harsh takeoff also had the effect that my relation to free software started with different expectations and maybe different disappointments. Different what seems obvious if you install a GNU Linux distribution and expect it to work like a Mac OS. My second introduction came from another direction and was less rough, but not less influential. At the audio department of the academy I was studying at, the Kunsthochschule für Medien in Köln, Martin Rumori had set up a series of seminars around the culture and cult of Unix and GNU Linux and free software in general. This was really exciting, a really exciting introduction to free software. It meant not only to get about ideas about different technical concepts and approaches, but also about the rich culture and history of software practices. Maybe to make it a bit clear, this happens within an art school context. I skipped the introduction to Java because I didn't understand object orientation, and I found it maybe therefore absolutely boring. This, like Linux and Unix, was a really strange world. There were stories and adventures to discover. This was exciting. It was also within this context that my first major project in the field of free software and graphic design started. In 2007, I was asked to create a visual identity for the Linux Audio Conference, an annual conference of Linux audio developers that was hosted at the KM in early 2008. The idea was to create a hyper-connective machine instrument environment, which was very much inspired by the idea that with Linux culture, users are encouraged to invent and create their own applications. The project started on paper, and actually I didn't know any serious programming language at the time. The only thing I knew that came close to coding was the terminal, and so I decided to write bash scripts. Posters were generated from a pool of modular illustrations, producing not one poster, but a lot of variations. The idea was to approach graphic-wise the divergent, playful, and absurd combinations made possible through a modular system. The following years should bring more graphic design projects. I'm rather fast skipping through since I'm also already quite rare on time. Projects all more or less based on the same idea. Design rules to design graphics and explore doing graphic design with free libre open source software. Okay, then back on track. I've been making graphic design with free software for some years. I love graphic design, doing, making, producing. Unfortunately, there's no such thing as free lunch, and I was looking for an arrangement that can create space and resources for the making and production and distribution of experimental printmaking beside the commissioned work that created exactly these spaces and resources. So, to create spaces and resources for doing graphic design with free software. That's where the idea started. The exciting idea of a research and development lab for graphic design disguised as a bookshop, an open tool shed with a shopping window, which is right now a website. So, mail order. Why mail order distribution? When working with digital stuff, we deal a lot with metaphors. The desktop, folders, windows, the canvas, Photoshop. Building digital stuff happens along words and images which create references. So this is not a shop. It's not around your corner. It's not a physical space. You do not come by and pick up stuff. So let's name it. It's mail order distributions. I skip also this. I've grown up on the countryside and all sorts of publications, but also catalogs have been like a window to another world. And to create local versions of like a global culture was part of an attitude back then. But back on track, the website. It's a website. You can click and scroll, click again and click to add items to your order. I'm explicitly saying not shopping basket. You can collect items combined with mandatory or optional donations for initiatives that actually make free software possible. You can repeat, see what you collected, and proceed to checkout. And this is unfortunately where all the fun stops at the moment, because I had too little time to completely finish the checkout routine. But what I have is the bigger version of an idea, which is make and sell print objects for the physical world. No electricity, no maintenance, no updates. Share digital sources, moving at the speed of light, never finished, possible to share at very little costs, as how-to, a starting point for something different. Now let's have a look at how to share the sources. To provide access to the sources, I decided after some ideas to make the whole thing more a hub than a platform. This means I had to resist the urge to gather all the files and create a clean universal structure, but link directly to the source trees. Along the mail order items, you can find links to the source trees and browse exactly the environment that I use for the production. I maintain most of my design work as Git repositories since around 2013. This means access does not need to be prepared after the fact, but is part of the projects anyway. This is my specific style of working, but I'm curious how making things public might also fit different approaches. The idea is not to provide cleaned up source files prepared for convenient reuse, but allow a view behind the scenes. Because that is what interests me and hopefully others. What interests me are the ideas, processes, know-how, approaches, and behind the scenes. From tools to files, from ideas to production, I'd like to find ways to talk about, document the activity of software-driven graphic design and different aspects of its complexities. This documentation should not happen as an aseptic tutorial platform. What I'm trying to find is a way how to provide interesting access to the daily mess of an actual working environment, because that is what I'm interested in. Not a gallery, but a visit to the print shop. Part of this approach is also to collect and reflect and share what happens along the projects, documentation, content, explanations, different resources, reflections, all close to the stuff that may consider it the actual work. More documentation, intermediary files and resources, explanations, utilities, snippets, inspirational texts, experiments, and more experiments. Okay. What is there actually at the items right now? So far, we have seen the structure, and time was running short also there. So I'm starting small and simple. For this presentation, I decided to have three categories. First is free merchandise. The idea is classic merchandise, stuff for fans. But as described before, it should be not limited to printed objects, but serve as opportunity to share ideas, processes, know-how, approaches embedded in an actual practice. Git has been playing a central role in all my work for some years now. So maybe I'm a fan and I'm starting here. There's more than one direction is a reference to the Perl motto. There's more than one way to do it. And I like the idea of the logo in general. The logo is available under the Creative Commons attribution license. The license allows distribution, remixing, tweaking. And I've been playing around with the logo for some time. And I decided to make a circle variant for a sticker based on two aspects. A circle is a nice and affordable standard format for stickers. A circle has no top and no bottom, and therefore no fixed direction. What I consider actually a better mode for the little branch. Another piece of software I've been using and enjoying for years is Image Magic. So it was just another logical candidate. After being interested in copyright issues for some years, I was surprised that the cute little wizard, whom I considered a trademark and therefore copyrighted, came along a standard Debian installation. There were similar thoughts for the Debian packaging team, but they decided that the picture is available according to the Image Magic public license and therefore conforms to the Debian free software guidelines. After I was quite happy about this finding and started to working with the little wizard, I was not so sure after some time. So if you have opinions or expertise, I'm happy to talk. Anyway, after I made the first sticker, I thought it would be nice to have also one that looks in the other direction. So here we go. Second category is media arcologies. I start with the broken image. Most people know this. And I was interested where it comes from. So I did a little research. I kind of vaguely knew that it was part of Netscape Navigator and therefore must have been also famously open sourced. So I found a Git version of the original CVS versioning. And I created a vector version in Inkscape, a CMYK variant with Scribus, and made some stickers. The next research was the canonical tiger, the cubic spline tiger, or it may be also called the canonical tiger, is part of the GhostScript package as a test image like forever. And it spread to many different places. Now it's also a sticker. Last category, and I'm also already really over time, is just the rest. Some years ago, a friend and me created Fontaine, a font collection system, and font collection. And this is a matching poster. The future. So up, what's up for the future? Poster, stickers, books, ephemera, editorials, documentation, how-tos, interrogating tools and practices, stopping, not ending, with graphic objects. That's what free should be. And as somebody once said about the conversations book, beautiful with all its little errors. I brought some of the stuff, get it at the desk. Please leave a donation for the meeting, and thank you for listening.
Oh, can I get some mic on here? Some
other questions?
That's the question I would have asked. Mm-hmm. So there's one.
Yep.
Or how often other people have access to either before
test?
Actually,
can you repeat the question?
The question was, I think, if I have feelings about being stuff online and being forked and reused, and did I understand right?
Yeah, how often?
I was wondering how often other people have accessed or forked this material. It's not your feelings necessarily, but intuition about it.
Actually, I'm the main person that reuses the stuff. So that's how it happens, because it's, and maybe that's also the point why I'm more interested in the stories behind than in the actual software or files, because I think that's where also for me it gets interesting. It's like approaches, how to approach a project, and it's so personal. It's not like take it and use it as a state of the art design solution. It's more about an experience. So, and that's also for me the more interesting stuff to share actually than like files or tools, because I'm not a software developer. I make the stuff. It works for me. It works across projects, but it's not, a new out of the box creative cloud with source code included. So, yeah.
Okay, thanks. Jules, could you get ready, please? Your mic in the back, and we have time for one or two questions. Are there any other questions?
So I notice you make a lot of stickers. Do you do anything special to prepare with stickers? Like, do you print them yourself, or do you have a service do that or something?
No, at the moment, it's actually just budget printing. So like cheap online printers, and which is like a cost to the resources, timely and money-wise. But I've been experimenting with printmaking a lot of different projects, like combination of offset and digital print, like for the festivals, and that would be really nice to make, but that's has not yet been happening for the disguised bookshop. So that's quite ordinary printing in this case.
Any other question? I got one for you.
You got.
So, I mean, you talked a lot about the process and the different designs you took, the software you used. What was the biggest learning you had during the whole project?
You mean in... Could you be more concrete?
What is there anything new you learned where you wouldn't have imagined that this would happen, or that this would
everything? Well, basically everything. No, it's too much to count. It's like what you expect, what can you expect, what would you like to expect, what not, how it works, how you find things, how you meet people. Yeah, there were so many exciting surprises along the way. That's, I think, also the point that keeps me going, because yeah, it's exciting. It's exciting to work with software, to invent things, to find things, and that's what I'm actually missing with nowadays proprietary environments. It's all should be easy, out of the box, and that's not. Not like this inventive way to work, and that's what I find great and inspiring about free software. So, if this answers a bit your question,
it does. It does.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for your talk, for sharing your experience. So, and we have one more talk before the break. About UI frameworks. Okay, you're all
right.
Set up. Great.
Can you hear me? Yeah.
Then, Jules, thank you for being here on stage. And yeah, looking forward to hear from your side. Thanks.
Thanks. All right, so exploring modern UI frameworks. Well, first, I just want to say thank you to everyone who makes this conference possible. All the people who spent, I don't want to know how many hours you spent preparing this conference, so thank you very much. Also, thank you to everyone who's here and who's making this conference a great place to be. I'm really having a blast every single year when I come here, so I love meeting all of you and discussing with all of you, so thank you for all of that. Right, so hi, I'm Jules, and this is Cool Lab, so I am the developer behind Cool Lab. And this talk is not about Cool Lab, it's going to be some context. But yeah, if you want to learn more about Cool Lab, feel free to come tomorrow at the workshop. So the talk. Why did I spend the last 3 months of my life just exploring every single UI framework out there, comparing them, trying them, changing, never being happy? So what's the problem? Currently, Cool Lab is written with DRAM GUI. For those who know it, it's immediate mode UI library. I'm going to explain what it means later on, but it works very well. It's an amazing library. I love it. Don't get me wrong. Very easy to use, very powerful. You can do lots of things. I know that Tixol is also using DRAM GUI. It's a great library. Yeah, you can see it everywhere. So what's the problem? There's one problem with DRAM GUI. It's layouts. It's very not good at doing layouts. So if you want something simple like widgets below each other, it works perfectly fine. If you want them on a row, works fine, and that's it. Like if you want aligning to the right, even spacing, doing some more like complex grid things, it's not gonna work. Or basically, what it means is you have to compute everything manually. So you have to compute the size, subtract the width, and compute how many items. It gets complicated. It takes a lot of time, and it worked. It worked for a while. But the thing that kind of made me want to change is I wanted to redesign our nodes menu. Currently, it looks like this. It's a big wall of text on the right, and it's overflowing the slides. It also overflows in the window in the real life. So it's been bothering me for a while, so I started redesigning it. You can see my beautiful drawings here. So basically, I wanted a very large layout. I wanted some nets for every effect. And one thing very important when you want... Oh. Yeah, perfect. When you want to do that kind of layouts is you just want to spawn thumbnails, and as soon as they overflow and they would go outside the window, you want them to wrap on the next line automatically. And that's something you cannot do in AmGUI, so I was like, okay, it's going to be very painful. Maybe it's time to use something else. Also, at the same time, I was finishing revamping a website, so I had spent a few months using React, and I really enjoyed it, and it made me realize that, there are some limitations in AmGUI. Maybe it's time to switch. So, my first approach was, I do not want to rewrite everything. It's a very, very long thing to do. And I heard about Clay. Clay is a very cool library. If you've not heard about it, there's some great videos about it. Basically, Clay is something that can go on top of any UI framework. And it's a layout engine. So it can do everything that's missing in AmGUI. And what's very cool is then it isn't a standalone thing. It just gives you a list of rectangles and where to place them on the screen. And so, for example, I tried in 1 hour, I had an AmGUI version of Clay. And I just drew rectangles with AmGUI, drew images, drew text. And that's basically everything that Clay needs you to do. And you can make everything. So. Worked very well for I had a prototype running in 1 hour, and I could just have been done and not make this talk. What the problem was is Clay is very recent, and it was missing some essential features that I needed, especially like wrapping when you overflow and move it to the next line. There's an issue open for 2 years, no progress on it, and all that kind of thing. So. It's always a big question when you want to use something that's very new. It's shiny, it has cool features, and etc. But you also have to consider, like, is it going to continue? Is the developer going to still work on it? Is the approach viable? Maybe, like, the layout that I need, maybe it's actually impossible with the approach I took. So I didn't want to gamble. Like, is the feature going to happen in 1 year, 10 years? I don't know. So I didn't take that approach. But honestly, and that's going to be true for every single framework I present, they're all amazing. They all work very well. All have great advantages and also some problems. And that's something I realized midway during my exploration is that anyways, there's no perfect solution anyways. And so, well, yeah, Clay is amazing. And you could definitely use it if it fits your needs. And especially maybe in a few years when it gets more mature. Then, okay, so keeping the existing UI, the approach didn't work. So I was like, okay, maybe let's do it. Let's rewrite at least the UI part of the code base, which is a big part. Like it's probably more than half of the code base is just UI code. So, but okay, let's bite the bullet. Let's do it. In the long run, I think it's going to save me time. So, okay, why not? And so the first thing I explored was the web. Of course, it's like the big obvious choice. I've had some very good experience doing some websites. So yeah, okay, web technologies are very great. Okay, yeah. What are the advantages? There are also some problems, of course. We're going to talk about them later. But the web is the single biggest framework that is used absolutely everywhere. There's been a billion things built with it. And therefore, many people know how to use it. There's a lot of tooling around it. There's so many features in there, like every weird layout, complex animation, whatever. It's all built in. And if it's not built in, you've got a JavaScript library doing it. So that's very cool. You can make basically every single UI you want very easily with it. Also, if you have a designer making designs in PenPart or in Figma, you can just export the thing to web and it just works. So yeah, very, very important, very nice. Very nice framework, allows you to save a lot of time. Also, one thing that's very important is hot reloading. When you do UIs in C++, for example, with AmGUI, like I'm doing, you have to recompile every time. So you make a change, wait for it to compile. It can take a few seconds, a few minutes, depending on the size of your project. And then you see the change. And then you go, oh, no, actually, I don't want 5 pixels of gap. Maybe 8 pixels look better. And you recompile, wait again, see the result. So in web, it's very different. You just save, and it just works. Oh, yeah. So that saves a lot of time. So that's really what was my initial goal, was like, OK, I'm going to save a lot of time. I pay a big cost upfront by rewriting everything. But then I use web. Everything is very easy to do, very fast to iterate. Great. Also, one thing to keep in mind when we say web, I should say web technologies, because it doesn't force you to make a website. You don't have something that's online, you have to go in your URL. You can also make traditional desktop apps with with web technologies. The most famous framework is called Electron. There are many, many applications built with it, like VS Code, Discord, whatever. So yeah, it's a framework. You write your front end with normal web technologies, and then it creates a desktop app behind it. There's a few problems about Electron. I don't have time to talk about them. I don't think there's that big of a problem. The biggest reason why I did not use Electron is, in Electron, the backend, your actual application, it's not C++ like CoolLab is, it's JavaScript, which is very great for many people, and they're very happy to use JavaScript for their front backend. It did not work for us, of course. I mean, I did also considered changing language, but that's another story. In the end, I decided that JavaScript was not it. You can also do native plugins with Electron, so you can do C++ Electron applications. That's possible. It seemed complicated, and I was not sure, like, especially how debugging would work when you have to compile separately, etc. So I prefer just keeping something simple. Also, for new developers, I prefer, like, if it's a standard C++ or whatever application, rather than a complicated setup. But Electron is not the same in the family. It was the first one, and that's why it's the most famous one. There are a ton of them. So some of them are in C++. I mentioned these two. They are paid proprietary software, so that was not an option. And unfortunately, in C++, the only other option was Chromium Embedded Framework. So basically, it's the core code that is behind Google Chrome and that other browsers reuse, Brave, Edge. And it's basically a C++ library. So you can also just build your application around that and use that to create your UIs. I know that Graphite, that's what they use. So this is definitely possible. It's not as simple as Electron, because Electron puts a lot of glue on top of it and a nice framework to make a full-featured application immediately. Ceph is lower level, but definitely possible. That would definitely have been an approach I could have taken. But that's not the one. Because when I was exploring alternatives to Electron, I saw Tari. And Tari looked very, very promising. And one big thing about Tari is the backend is not in C++, it's in Rust. So I'm making a small parenthesis for those who don't know Rust and C++ very well. So Rust is basically a modern version of C++. Like it's the same kind of language, very low level, very performance heavy. So very perfect for all the software. If you don't know C++, mostly all the software you will see at LGM, most of them are in C++. It's really like the go-to for like low-performant applications. And Rust is the same kind of thing, redesigned 25 years after C++. And from my experience, I have tried it, and it's true what everybody says on the internet. Yeah, Rust is amazing, very enjoyable. I'm closing the parenthesis. It's not a Rust talk, but come talk to me if you want to talk about Rust. So yeah, that was I had seen Rust for a while, and rewriting everything in Rust was not reasonable. It was not enough to justify rewriting everything just to change language, even though it has some advantages over C++. But now I was in a situation where I was about to rewrite half of the application anyways, and so I was like, why not the other half? And also, as I started considering this possibility, I realized that, there's that big system. I want to rewrite it anyways, because if I want to enable this great feature that has been on my to-do list for 2 years, I need to do that big refactoring anyways, and this and that. And so I kind of realized that I wanted to rewrite the whole application at some point down the line anyways, so might as well do it once now, do it properly, spend a few months choosing the right technology, and hopefully be happy forever. And never change again, never do another rewrite again. So, okay, maybe Rust. If I keep C++ like in 10 years, I'm gonna hate myself for choosing Rust. So, I gave up and I said, okay, let's rewrite everything. I'm a programmer, I can't resist rewriting everything. I'm sorry. I know it's a bad idea, but yeah. So, started experimenting with Tari. Absolutely amazing framework, lots of very nice little things, very easy to use, very complete, etc., etc. One big problem is, so in Tari, just like Electron, your front end is standard HTML, CSS, JavaScript. You can use whichever framework you like, React, Svelte, whatever. And your backend is in Rust. And then the two have to communicate. Whenever there's a change on the Rust side, so say your Rust engine is like modifying the value of some variable, some number, you have to synchronize the UI so that the UI knows, displays a new value, and vice versa. When users modify things in the UI, you have to tell the Rust backend that something changed, and you have to do this for basically absolutely everything. So every single bit of state on the Rust side that also needs to be shown in the UI, you have to synchronize them. You have to duplicate the types, duplicate the code. Don't forget to call a callback whenever something changes, so that everything's updates properly. So that was looking a bit problematic. And so there's another very similar thing, which is Dioxys. The only difference is that in Dioxys, your front end is not JavaScript; it's Rust. It's still web technologies. You're still writing HTML, CSS, but inside Rust. And then all the logic, if that condition is true, then show this part of the code. Otherwise, show this part of the UI. It's done in Rust. It's literally the same thing as Svelte or React or the JavaScript frameworks. It's just in Rust, which arguably is more complex than JavaScript. But in the case where but this has a big advantage that it's one single language. You define an object in Rust. Your engine uses it, renders some things. And then the UI can reuse the same thing. There's no duplication, no synchronization. So I switched to Dioxys. Again, beautiful framework. Works very nicely. Lots of very enjoyable things. Lots of nice small features that I don't have time to talk about. one other very nice thing I should mention with Dioxys, And one problem with Starry, when you're doing that two separate words that need to communicate, sending a few numbers is no problem. Sending images is a big problem. Like the image would be rendered by on the GPU, by your Rust engine, whatever. And then you need to, is the UI who needs to display it. So the naive solution is download it to the CPU, copy it to the UI process, which is a different process. So basically almost a separate application, and then you can display it. It introduces latency, and especially for real-time application like Coolab, it was not okay. Honestly, if you're doing some offline, like GIMP, Inkscape, or Graphite, could absolutely work. But in our case, this was not possible. There are workarounds. So what I did a prototype in Tori, where basically you render the UI, except for one div, which is transparent, and then you let the Rust engine just render in the same window on top of it. It's a hack. It works perfectly fine. So that was the solution. But yeah, another problem with Starry. Dioxus has exactly the same problem, except for one thing, which is they're working on an experimental, basically new web browser, but it's a very stripped down lightweight version for just our needs, which is basically rendering HTML, CSS, and that's it. So they're stripping all the JavaScript engine, they're stripping all the billion APIs that are available in the web, so much more lightweight, etc., which is cool. And one big thing is, since it's really built natively, it can interact with your GPU API. So the same thing that we render in Rust in our engine, we could just give a texture to Dioxus, to the new renderer, and it would just display it. The normal version and what Tori and Dioxus use, they use, just like Electron, they use the Chromium embedded framework. And it's a bit awkward to send texture to it because, like, it's a separate thing and it's a big code base that you, and people have tried to hack around and it's possible, to give texture to Ceph, but yeah, complicated, but whatever. So could work. Dioxus sounded even better. Oops, sorry, spoiling. Okay. So Dioxus solves all my problems. I'm almost happy with it. But, and there was one final but, I realized, that actually, none of the web frameworks are ever going to work for me. For one big reason, a bit similarly to how Tori, you have to duplicate the code and everything and it gets complicated. Dioxus fixes some of those problems, but there's still one fundamental problem, which is your UI is what's called a retain mode UI. So basically, you need the UI only renders when it needs to, and you have to tell it, oh, this value has changed, so please update that little part of the UI. And all the modern framework, React, Svelte, and Dioxus, they simplify it. It's not a problem on a day-to-day basis. That for most applications, it's not a problem. You don't realize it. It's just, instead of, for example, instead of having just a number, you have a signal. It's called signals. You have a signal of a number. It behaves just like a number. But whenever you modify that number, it automatically tells the UI to re-render the right path. So it works almost transparently, but you have to wrap everything inside signals. And in my case, it was a problem because the Rust engine is something very separate from the UI code. And I didn't want to have it strongly coupled. I didn't want to have to modify all my types. And especially like, in my case, I also want debug UIs. So basically absolutely everything in the engine, I really want it to be showable in the UI. For example, one thing we have in CoolLab is, I want to show all the textures that are currently loaded just so I can debug and see if everything's working fine or not. So absolutely everything would have to be wrapped in signals, and like signals work for numbers and strings, but textures probably not. So I would have to make custom callbacks, etc. Anyways, you get the point. It works. It's very great. But but it's annoying in my case for my architecture, where really I wanted to have a separate library that doing the rendering. Also, that's a talk for another year, but I have designed this little rendering library as something very universal and not tied to CoolLab, so maybe some other projects can reuse it. And so I really did not want to have Dioxus coupled to it and forcing everyone who wants to use that little renderer to also use a UI in Dioxus. So and that's not a problem about web only. Like, there are other frameworks that are not web, but they are still retain mode UIs, meaning they need some kind of callbacks to know when things change or not, and it's annoying. And so what's the solution to that? Well, the solution is immediate mode UIs. So, if you remember the first slide of this talk, DRAM GUI is immediate mode UIs. It's what I'm used to. And I realize that I really miss its simplicity. In MGUI, you render every frame the UI. So it doesn't need callbacks. It doesn't need to know what changed or what doesn't change. You don't need to track any of that. It's very simple. You just tell it, oh, here is the current state of my engine. Here is a list of textures. Here are the values. And it just works. It just displays them. Very simple. There are some limitations. You cannot do quite as complex of layouts and styling as web technologies if you want to keep it very performant. But you can still do very cool UIs with it. That's not a problem. So, and that allows, to have something things very decoupled. I really wanted. I'd much rather just add in my engine a little getter that says, hey, here is a list of textures. You can display it in the UI. It's much simpler, much less intrusive than having to say, OK, you actually need to embed the Dioxys dependency and wrap everything around signals because I use this for this specific library. So, my love for DRAM GUI came back. So what's the conclusion? Should I just give up everything? Well, first, in the meantime, I fell in love with Rust, and I fell in love with all the new ideas and re-architecturing that I had done, so I wanted to do a big rewrite anyways. And also, more seriously, the problems that I had in DRAM GUI, they are not gone. And so, that's the solution. Hopefully, eGUI, it's a library very strongly inspired by DRAM GUI. In Rust, which is nice. Although DRAM GUI is such a famous library, you have bindings in every language, so that's not a problem if you want to use DRAM GUI in Rust. Also possible. But the second great thing about eGUI is that it improves on some of the problems of MGUI, especially layouts. In eGUI, you can do much more advanced stuff. I mean, you're still much more limited than web, but already much better than MGUI. Especially my big use case of, when elements overflow, they wrap to the next line automatically. eGUI does it, and many other nice things. So that's it, I guess, eGUI. Disclaimer, I have not had time to try it too much, so maybe there's another problem that... But I don't think so. Honestly, I've used MGUI for 5 years. It was working very well, except for some limitations, some things that were complicated. eGUI seems to improve on that, so hopefully I'm going to be happy with it. And in a way, I'm sad that web did not work for me, because web would have, on top of improving the layout, it would have been so much nicer for many reasons, like better styling, faster development, hot reloading, whatever. And there were all the nice little bonuses that I tried to get in the... in what I was doing, my big change. In the end, I cannot get them. I can just fix the one problem that I had in MGUI, the one fundamental problem, and not more, which is cool. All right, so time for some conclusions. So that's something I realized. There is no perfect solution. UI is a very complicated topic. You have to accept that every framework and every different paradigm is going to have some very shiny selling points, and it's going to have some problems. So you just have to figure out. That's what I had done, like a big list of all the small little details, but don't focus on all the small little things. Like, of course, you're going to be, oh, Tori, he's got this and that, and I don't have to spend a week implementing that because Tori does it automatically. Yes, it's nice, but in the end, you can do it yourself. So I had to really stop looking at all of those, or otherwise it's very overwhelming. You have so many options to compare and be like, oh, yeah, Dioxys has this and Tori has that, and you don't know. So I had to stop and just make a list of, okay, what are the essential things? What are the things that I cannot compromise on? And all the rest, well, I just bite the bullet and accept that the framework I choose has some problems. So, yeah. Here are some resources if you want to learn about Clays and people talking about UI design and limitations and trade-offs and lots of interesting things. I'm going to share the slides on Mastodon, tagging LGM. So if you want to get them, I'll share them. And yeah, questions? Yeah.
Is there some kind of scripting integration for eGUI like there is for DRM GUI? I remember using DRM GUI with Lua, for example, which made the hot reloading possible.
Oh, do you mean some bindings in the Lua?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pre-existing stuff.
I'm not too sure. DRM GUI has been there for such a long time. There's bindings in basically every language you can imagine. eGUI, there might be some. For sure, in the future, as the library matures, I think there will be bindings everywhere. Yeah. To complement your question, DRM GUI and eGUI, they really come from the world of video games and integrating in engine, etc., which is also a good fit for CoolLab and other like graphics editor apps because they're really designed. For example, the node graphs that we have in CoolLab, which is one big part of it, like there's libraries in eGUI, there's all the sliders for picking colors and whatever. And so, yeah. That's also one nice thing about them. Yeah.
Thanks for the talk. Why not Qt or GTK?
Yeah. GTK, I don't know. Qt, I have never tried. I have the impression that it's a bit old and complicated. And so I might be wrong. I know one thing in the same vein, Juice, that I use a lot at work. I really think we can do better nowadays. And I really think, so there's no perfect solution and there's some fundamental problems, but I think Juice and other frameworks also have like some complexities that is accidental, and I think we can do better. So that's my humble opinion. I'm not sure on that take, honestly. Except Juice, I don't like Juice. Sorry, I tried it. Yeah.
With so many names dropped already, I'll add one more. Slint is something that's also very interesting. It's a bit like Qt, but in Rust and with many new ideas. Also, they have hot reloading in a way.
I unfortunately did not have time to talk about all the frameworks I explored, so I kept the most interesting ones. But definitely, Slint is very cool. They have kind of their own version of CSS, so you can do styling on with a separate language, which look pretty nice. And there's a ton of them, like. There's Iced in Rust, which looks very cool, and yeah, plenty that I didn't have time to mention, unfortunately.
You seem to have hit the nail for the different toolkits. So maybe one more question, and then let's just continue the discussion in the break, yeah?
So in terms of web UI, I've been kind of experimenting and investigating similar things for similar reasons in this sort of similar UI. One thing I was looking at, and I'm curious, you're talking about synchronizing state between the browser view and the application. And I was looking recently at something like HTMX and the idea of having completely stateless browser side. Did you look at that at all?
No, I don't think in our case where we need to have something. I mean, I kind of not... No, I have not. I have considered, I didn't have time to talk about it, but also like changing language completely, like making a full web application in full JavaScript running on in the browser. Mostly for performance would have been mostly fine, I think, since the work happened on the GPU anyways. I also read that it's still not quite as good as native, and so for some other reasons, I didn't do a full web thing. And then if you want to have some split things where you have a backend in Rust, for example, and then a UI. Yeah, so I ended up with the problems I talked about. But yeah, I'm going to mention one last thing. But yeah, as I said again, all of the frameworks are probably the best one for you, and probably all the solutions here are amazing for you. Maybe web is a solution for you, especially if you have like a quote-unquote simple application. Please do some web stuff. Web is amazing. If you have Tori is amazing also. If you want some heavy computation and you need the performance of Rust, but just for some simple tasks, for small tasks, and the rest of the logic of your application is entirely in the JavaScript in the UI part, it's absolutely possible. Definitely works very well for some projects, but yeah, just not for me. Yeah, sorry.
Great. All good. We have still 25 more minutes to continue the discussion around here. Feel free to do so, ask my questions, feel free to say hello to old friends, feel free to introduce yourself to new people you haven't met yet. You see, there were some hands.